we do have Mike Wilner right now, who had his car spat upon, at least if I read your Twitter timeline correctly. That's really unfortunate, Michael.
Very strange, too. I mean, I was leaving the pitch talks in Hamilton. I drove like a couple of blocks away, and when I was making the turn to get on to, I want to say King Street, whatever that takes you to the 403 to get back home, some guy was crossing the street and he stopped when he got to the other side to spit on my car.
Wow. Maybe that's just how they do it in the Hammer. I don't know. I haven't been there enough to say
maybe.
For sure. Yeah. But he it's not like he knew who you were. It was just your car looked spittable, right?
Yeah. And apparently somebody tweeted me later that night that, as they were leaving, which might have been after I left, some guy started screaming racist things at this couple that was walking down the street. So
yay.
It might have just been the same lunatic.
Yeah, it's, you know what? And maybe it's somebody that needs mental help. So we'll leave it at that. I still need to get out to one of these pitch talks things. I was working with Carly Agro yesterday, who hosted it. Did she host the one in Hamilton? I know she hosted the one in Toronto the other day.
Yeah, no, she wasn't in Hamilton. It was Ashley Docking who was hosting in Hamilton and in Waterloo, but both of them did a wonderful job.
Yeah, I've heard it was fun. So, yeah, again, I still need to get out there.
November 29th in Barrie.
I'd like to be invited for free.
December 8th in Tavistock.
I don't know if, like, I could ever really wrap my head around paying money to go see you speak about baseball.
So, I could get you on the list.
Oh, okay. All right. You heard it here first.
But you should have done the one on Thursday, because Bob Kendrick of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum was there, and he was phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, there's some of the guys they get for these things are pretty incredible.
Yeah, and me.
And then you, who gets his car spat upon immediately following these things. So there's a lot to get to. So it's official now, the Kendrys Morales thing. We spent about a week talking about it. It's no big surprise.
We're not going to talk about Hamilton?
What about, okay.
I thought we were going to talk about Hamilton.
Like just the city of Hamilton in general?
No,
or how Mike Pence was at that?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Is that actually what you wanted to talk about?
Why not?
Okay, go ahead. The floor is yours, I suppose.
I don't understand it. I don't understand how anybody could think that they were being disrespectful to him.
No.
No, at all. And
By the way, we should clue people in, because not everybody, you know, mixes their politics and sports, and, you know, the people maybe don't know what happened. But yes, Vice President-elect Mike Pence was at Hamilton on Broadway yesterday, which no longer has Lin-Manuel Miranda. So I imagine ticket prices are much lower than they once were for that show.
Oh, I wouldn't bet on it.
Really? Just as high, but he's the star, man.
Yeah.
And I think is the rest of the cast the same? Or I think it's an entirely new cast. But anyways.
I have no idea.
So he was booed lustily upon his arrival, and it was apparently a very heated performance, and some of the lines were directed right at him. And then post-show, the cast had a little soliloquy for Mike Pence. And, yeah, some people took umbrage to that.
Yeah, in which they were very respectful, and you know,
I thought
it
so
reminded
too.
Me, oh, I didn't know about the fact that some lines were directed right at him in the
yes.
show and stuff like that.
And there was some cheering, apparently. Yeah, certain moments.
First of all, I mean what's the word I'm looking for? Utter and complete shameful hypocrisy of Donald Trump and some of the other Republicans suggesting that theater should be a safe space, when all they've done for months is mock people for suggesting that there should be safe spaces for them. I think that's unbelievable. But the other thing is, it sort of reminded me of the guy at the Republican, I think it was a woman at the Republican National Convention, who just held up a sign that said, "Don't hate." All it said was, "Don't hate."
Yeah.
And she got it ripped away from her, and she
it's
got
insane.
Kicked out and all of this stuff. I don't understand why people are upset when people are asking them to not hate people, and when people are asking them to, you know, saying we're anxious and we're scared and we want you to know that, and we want you to govern for all Americans. And I know this. We're supposed to be talking about sports.
Nah, but I'm fine with it. Like, yeah.
But yeah, it's you know, there are valid things to be upset with the left about. Asking them to not hate, asking people on the right to not hate them, is not a valid thing.
I can't tell you, like, how engaged with this whole, you know, for about a year and a half, how engaged I've been with the Donald Trump stuff and just monitoring the U.S. presidential election. I listen to two podcasts a week. I think everybody's, or a lot of people, jumped on board that Keeping It 1600 podcast on the Ringer podcast network. I can't get enough of it, and it's mind-boggling, Michael. And maybe it shouldn't be. And people, and you've seen probably more of this country than I have. I think maybe. I mean, and that
which
might just
country?
Canada. Because I'm going to make the
not. I've flown over it a lot, but yeah. Not.
I thought
not
you might. Yeah, I thought just by virtue of you being older than me, you may have. But
I have only set foot in three provinces.
Okay, so maybe not. But yeah, I think there's a lot of you know, looking down their noses at our neighbors to the south in this country, and I think a lot of what you're seeing south of the border does exist in this country. If you like drive a couple hours outside of the city of Toronto, whether that's north or west or east, like, I think that stuff exists here more than people realize or want to admit.
Oh, I think so too. Absolutely. And, you know, we've had a lot of racially charged episodes in this country in the last couple of weeks since Donald Trump's been elected president. It's like there's been carte blanche for horrible people to say and do horrible things. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, just look at Kelly Leach running for the leadership of the Conservative Party, who wants to return to Canadian values,
yeah,
which is code word for white people.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have to do everything we can to stop the poison from coming north.
I'll try and pivot a little bit back to sports.
All right, let's talk about baseball now.
Okay, but I'll just do it in a way that still addresses what we're talking about a little bit, because this happened. And we'll talk about baseball a little bit, and I don't know if there is an analogy to this, but you've hung around, well, you've covered this team for a long time, and you know the principles, and you know the big voices and the leaders on this Blue Jays team. I mean, the election happened during baseball's off season. And we've heard NBA stars have been the most outspoken, I would say. Politically, you've seen, of course, the Colin Kaepernick stuff, and then he didn't vote. So, I mean, and Mike Evans, same deal, who directly is protesting against Donald Trump and didn't vote in the election. So, okay, it's hard to take those guys seriously. But I wonder if, and there's going to be more issues, and this isn't going away, at least for the next 4 years. I wonder if we'll hear Major League Baseball, its biggest stars speak out. We heard Adam Jones talk about why there's no speaking out in baseball at the end of last season. I wonder, though, if now it's a little more acceptable to do it, even if you're a big star. And in Major League Baseball, it's guaranteed contracts and it's big cash and guys have financial security to do it. I wonder if we do see it in Major League Baseball next year, Mike.
It's a good question. I think we're less likely to see it in Major League Baseball. I hope we do see it from some people in Major League Baseball, but Major League Baseball is not certainly as diverse a sport as the NBA and as the NFL. And I'm sure that there are a lot of big league baseball players who are very happy with the results,
yeah,
of the U.S. election. So, you know, I don't know too many people who are politically active as far as big league ball players are concerned, but I think this would give people a reason to be politically active more than they had been before. But there are, you know, a lot of guys who are happy to take the tax break, who, you know, they make a lot of money. It'll be, I wonder if you'll hear from the Adam Joneses of the world. Jones tweeted today about Flint, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
And how everybody seems to have forgotten about Flint, except for the people who are still unable to drink the water there, which is a really good point. So if he's going to get, active, that would be great. But it would be nice to, you know, to hear from the big stars. Most of the big stars, are not members of
minority communities. So it would be nice to hear from the Latin guys, but again, a lot of them are not American citizens and can't really affect change. I just don't know. I don't know. I think that I think people up here who are shocked and horrified at what happened in the States might be equally shocked and horrified to find out how their heroes voted.
Yeah, that's true too. You try and have a level head about the whole thing, that nothing tangibly horrible has happened yet, but like there's no, every time you hear and maybe a hint that things are going to be okay and there's going to be some sort of level headedness and some move back towards sanity. And then,
I haven't had that yet.
No, we're still waiting for that. So.
Yeah.
All right. So that's depressing. Let's be happy for a second. You know how I feel about Joe Biagini is that I don't know how to feel about Joe Biagini, whether he's actually funny or trying too hard to be funny. To me, the meter's moving closer to funny. He couldn't have played that better with Fallon, I think.
No, I think he played it beautifully, actually, with Fallon, but on both ends.
First yes.
First time when he tried to give the high five.
Yeah, and they
Jimmy
looked at his hand.
To the audience, missed him. And he just looked at his hand like, what just happened? That was legitimately funny. And then the second time, obviously choreographed.
Yes.
So he wasn't going to stray from the script. But I think he played that beautifully. And good for Joe. You know what? Why not? He just wanted to go and check out The Tonight Show. And all of a sudden, he became a big piece of it. So, yeah, I think he played that perfectly.
Yeah, and he's setting up himself for maybe something post-playing career. I don't know what that is exactly.
Well, I mean, it depends how long the playing career is, right?
Yeah, but you never know.
He's been in the big leagues for 10 years, and this is
it. We'll forget
about it. I don't
think
people are going to remember. Yeah. Hey, remember 10 years ago, that thing with Jimmy Fallon? but I think he will continue to be himself, whether he bees himself in Buffalo this year, or where obviously there will be a much smaller audience, or whether he's able to continue doing it in the major leagues, where every time a microphone gets stuck in his face, he will talk about finger painting. We don't know yet, but I don't see any reason that his personality is going to change. And I saw this on Twitter last year. I have never seen it again, and I don't know where to find it. But if you can find, or Sudden Sam McKee can find this picture, the team picture for whatever AA team Biagini was on, either in 2014 or 15, it's hilarious. Basically, it's you know what a team picture looks like. Everybody's
yes.
kind of crowded around, and Biagini is standing like 10 feet to the left of the last guy, all by himself. With all this empty space in between him and the rest of the team. He's been like this forever.
Yeah, he's not afraid to be out on an island, so okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so I don't think that's going to change.
That's okay. So just for the record, my needle is pointing towards actually legitimately funny right now.
I think he just needs to learn to pick his spots. You know, he doesn't have to be on all the time.
Yeah.
And to his credit, when he came on the Blue Jay Day pregame show before game 5 of the World Series,
mm-hmm.
He said he only had 10 or 12 minutes, and he was great.
Yeah.
He was, he was still himself, but every other word out of his mouth wasn't just kidding, and he wasn't, he answered the questions that he was asked by the people, and he was great.
All right, so that's cool. So, as mentioned, Blue Jays make it official. Kendrys Morales yesterday, Ross Atkins speaking for the first time post that and addressed the status that the team has in negotiations with Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, or lack thereof. And he says there are still discussions ongoing, although it's less likely that Edwin re-signs here in Toronto. I think both are very, very minuscule odds of returning to the Blue Jays. We've discussed, you and I, about how Jose Bautista actually makes some sense for this team. But the more I talk to people, the greater sense I get that there is some moving on that's going to take place with Jose, and that Edwin, the market's just too great, and that it's tough to ask a guy to play 150 games at first base if that's what he's going to be asked to do. Do you think either guy is legitimately still a possibility for the Blue Jays?
I think Edwin is still a small possibility. But yeah, having talked to people in the last week, I think that everybody has moved on from Jose Bautista, and that the Blue Jays, I heard even that they would have been upset had he accepted the qualifying offer.
Yeah,
they just wanted to move past that.
I hadn't heard that. That speaks to like the off the field, like who Jose Bautista and the clubhouse dynamic, does it not?
Yeah, I think it does a little bit. And I think it would have been, there was an uneasy peace between them this year. I know I heard a couple outbursts in the clubhouse from him. And I think that everyone was just ready for the relationship to be over he was not like he wasn't trying or he didn't want to win or anything like that, obviously.
Yeah.
He wanted to win just as badly as anybody else. But I think they were ready to move on. Signing Kendrys obviously does make it more difficult, but I don't know about this market for Edwin Encarnacion. You know,
don't we hear that every offseason, though? The market's collapsing,
I don't think it's collapsing, but I think, you know, you have some major players who aren't in it. Depending on the CBA and the luxury tax, I don't think Boston is necessarily involved with Edwin. And also we talked about this last week that, Boston goes with its DHs.
Yeah.
David Ortiz always signed a 1-year contract for around $15 million for the most part. And that's not what Edwin's going to do. Houston, seems like they'd rather go short-term DH and Carlos Beltran. And they've already traded for Brian McCann and picked up, Josh Reddick. The Yankees seem to be waiting for 3 years hence or 2 years hence when Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are free agents, somebody else big.
Josh Donaldson?
Yeah, Josh Donaldson, sure. Why not? So I don't know. I mean, unless maybe the Giants get in on it or there's a National League team that is willing to give him 150 games at first base and willing to give him 4 years. I don't know if a National League team is going to bet on 4 years. I find it difficult to imagine that if Edwin comes back to the Blue Jays and says, you know what, I'll take the 480 now. I wanted to go out and look and see, and I find it hard to imagine that they'll say, no, sorry, forget it, off the table now, you blew it. He wants to be here. He likes it here. He's obviously a great player. I still think that the door is open a crack for Edwin, despite many protestations to the contrary that I've heard.
So then you must also believe Ross Atkins when he says they've discussed it with Kendrys Morales that, you know, hey, he's fine playing first base or, God forbid, left field.
He says he's fine playing first base.
Can you imagine? Like, he can't split time at DH and first base with Edwin, can he? Like, that's... Edwin's...
Well, he can play. Ugh. I mean, he could play 30 games at first, or 40 games. Look, we're talking about first base here. It's not rocket surgery.
Ron Washington says it's extremely difficult.
Yeah, but Kendrys has played it in the past. It's not like you're asking a catcher to go play first. It's not like like asking Scott Hatterberg to learn how to play first base, which he wound up doing fine.
It's
not the end of the world if you have a crappy first baseman. You know, lots of teams have won lots of games with
Adam Dunn was fine. Adam Lynn did all right.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you on that pretty much entirely. It's just, I do worry about a guy who broke his leg, jumping on home plate, playing
6 years ago.
missed an entire year. But yeah, for a guy who played, a total of 7 games, not in the DH spot last year?
I think it was more than that, but he played 6 games in the outfield.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Somehow.
Well, and it speaks, if they are willing to do it for a couple of games and he's okay there, Mike, it does, because one of my concerns with the signing of Morales, I still think he's a fine offensive player, and at 3 years and 33, it's a good signing, is that DH spot was really nice to have around with a team that's rather old. The Blue Jays are old. They are. They're one of the oldest in the major leagues. And Josh Donaldson has done a great job of staying on the field, but, you know, occasionally he's dinged up and you'd like to get him off his feet to use him in that DH slot hard when you got a guy who's a DH and nothing else. Same with Troy Tulowitzki. He was used in that DH spot. It was a thing where you saw him, what, like, you know, one, at least a couple of times a month. And it, if Kendrys is only your DH, you can't do that anymore.
I want you to look that up because I would say Troy Tulowitzki DH'd fewer than half a dozen times last year. And Josh Donaldson, yeah, he got banged up and he had to DH, but only for about a week. Jose Bautista has had to DH for a month or so, but that's not going to be an issue anymore. You're right. You always want flexibility, and you always want to be able to not have a locked in designated hitter. The Boston Red Sox won 3 World Series with a locked-in designated hitter. They won the division last year with a locked-in designated hitter. Last year, they were a lot younger than they've been before. The Blue Jays, as currently constructed, don't have people that you would say they need to rotate through DH to get them off their feet.
Yeah.
Except maybe Tulowitzki. But again, Tulowitzki's a guy who...
You're right, by the way. He only DH'd 3 times last year.
Yeah. Right, so he doesn't want to DH you, whether he's banged up or whether he's not, and he can certainly play shortstop. So I'm not really concerned about that.
Yeah, Josh Donaldson DH 19 times. All right, so you were right on that, but I might have been right when I kept bringing up Justin Smoak last week as like
yeah, he might have been
right, and you were so adamant.
I still believe. I mean, I know that there are. That Justin Smoak has huge allies in the Blue Jays front office.
Yeah, this is what I'm learning to find out.
Yeah, there's so much in there that he can be a legitimate major league, solid major league first baseman in a platoon. I think we're going to see like a Steve Pierce as a free agent. But it's difficult for me to imagine that you want to have a contender where your first baseman hits 8th, you know? I mean, it's such easy offense to get out of that spot.
Yep.
And if Justin Smoak, if Justin Smoak's your 8 hitter, there's just nothing wrong with that. He's not going to kill you. And if he plays on the strong side of a platoon, he's probably going to hit 20 homers. He's probably going to have an on-base percentage around 300, but you could do so much better. At first base. And when they signed him, nobody thought they signed him to be a starter. He wasn't given starters money or anything like that. I continue to believe that he's a bird in the hand. He's an, in case we can't do better, but they will be looking to do better.
It's scary, Mike. Yeah. Cause it's, I'm glad you've at least, you've realized that maybe your hardline stance that that's not going to happen is, it might happen now, right?
Yeah, it might happen.
It's horrible. And also, apparently, this front office, hey, you know what? They might be right. I'd probably give them a better than 50% chance, really, because they're smarter than me and you. And they have, you got to give them the benefit of the doubt, don't you? But man, it's so hard seeing him every day and seeing not just with the eye test, it's the numbers too, right? Like they match the eye test.
I think, though, if you saw him every day, it probably wouldn't be as bad. Once he lost playing time and became a sporadic player, he was awful.
No.
So I think that's what they think, too.
No.
I think that's what they think, and I think they probably think the same thing of Melvin Upton.
Yeah. Yeah, Upton, though, the numbers are good against lefties. He hits lefties well. Like, that's...
He did till he got to the Blue Jays.
Okay, but that's
the Blue Jays. He didn't hit anybody well.
It's tiny sample size, Mike. Like Mel, I still have faith that Melvin Upton, can be a really good right-handed side of a platoon. He'll face lefties. That's where I can separate what I see. That's what smart people do is they don't rely on everything you see. And I saw him not be very good as a Blue Jay. I can also take a longer sample size of his entire career and say, okay. I get it. I'm totally cool with this team expecting to contend and Melvin Upton starting against lefties all season next year. Like that actually makes sense to me because he does other things and he can actually hit lefties. Justin Smoke, nothing indicates that he's going to be good.
For the same reason, I wonder if Melvin Upton is going to be able to be a productive platoon player, because all those numbers against lefties, which were great, were put up when he was playing every day. And once he started to not play every day, he was awful. And so, maybe you take a half a season to get used to that. You come to camp knowing that that's going to be a thing, and maybe that will make it easier. Maybe it won't. So I think the jury's out there.
All right. Before we let you go, corner outfield, first base, so the large hole still to fill for the Blue Jays. Does anybody out there in free agency make a ton of sense to you? Like, you're not... Josh Reddick, I suppose, would have made sense, but that's a lot of money for a guy who can't hit lefties, and defense is very much a question for him. Like, you're not a John Jay guy, are you? Like, who makes sense? He's at least a contact guy. He's definitely not a walk guy.
Yeah, John Jay's okay. I mean, he's a 300 hitter who doesn't walk and who plays reasonable defense, and he can hit both sides, and he hits left-handed, so that's kind of nice. I'm on the Alex Avila train as a backup catcher. I know there are people who say, well, get Jason Castro or Wilson Ramos or Matt Wieters to be the backup catcher to Russell Martin. Those guys are full-timers, and they're not looking for backup jobs. I think Alex Avila may be at the point in his career where he's willing to accept a job as a backup, and he could play 60 games, and he could hit, and he's not a big drop-off defensively. He's a guy that I would love the Blue Jays to take a good hard look at to be the backup catcher. I think they're still looking at Michael Saunders, and that'll be sort of interesting given the two seasons that he had. And one wonders if, having that whole year off kind of affected his endurance last year and maybe made him, breakdown's not the right way to put it, go into the tank midway through the year. Steve Pierce is nice, and when you look at Steve Pierce and his career, he's actually hit righties better than Justin Smoke's hit righties. So he, if you bring him in, he may evolve.
It's not hard to do.
Full-time player. Yeah, but I think they're looking to be more left-handed. I think we're probably looking at the trade market too.
Well, that's what I was. The next guy I was going to bring up is Adam Eaton. Is that a guy that you give up some future for a guy who's under contract or under team control through the 2019 season?
Look, he made some huge strides last year. He was one of the best. Once they got him out of center field, he became one of the best defenders in the outfield in the game. He has a terrific arm. He's a left-handed hitter. He's got sneaky pop. He'll take a walk.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly, Adam Eaton would be a wonderful fit for this team.
Yeah, and he his on-base career against lefties is higher than his on-base against righties. Now, his OPS is lower against lefties because he doesn't have as much power. But, yeah, like 359 on-base against lefties, 356 against righties throughout his career. That's... it's a whole lot of not bad right there, Mike. So
yeah, and then there's your leadoff man, and he hit a bunch of homers last year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, 15.
Yeah, and you put him in right field, and all of a sudden that's one hole filled with a left-handed batter.
You'd have to give up some future for him, though.
Yeah,
right?
He's not going to come cheap.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, seriously, this is the last one. Anthony Alford, Is there a scenario in which it's like a couple of years ago where Miguel Castro and Roberto Osuna come to spring training and you think, oh, that's they're getting a little taste of camp here and they won't be on the opening day roster?
Zero chance that Anthony Alford makes the team out of spring training.
Okay, you probably said the same about Roberto Osuna and Miguel Castro, though, right?
Yeah, but it's different for pitchers versus position players. I mean, pitchers, and first of all, neither Osuna nor Castro would ever have made the team in a Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins regime. It's just not going to happen. They don't believe in moving guys that fast. But Alex Anthopoulos said it at the time, stuff plays, whether it's, you can get guys out of the major leagues with the same stuff you get guys out with an A-ball, if it's good enough. But for an offensive player, especially a guy like Anthony Alford, who missed so much time last year, zero chance. There's a better chance he gets traded than he makes the team. And I don't think he gets traded either because you're kind of selling low on him off the year he had last year.
Yeah, you are. And you probably don't want to trade for Tim Tebow either because he hasn't.
Yeah, I know.
He hasn't been so good in the Arizona Fall League. Thank you, Michael. Enjoy the day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.